Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Ingmarie, and welcome to our studio again. And talk today would be on water. We have a scarcity of water. Anyhow, the Tamil Nadu, for a few months now, it's already a statement of drought, as far as I know. So how are we standing in Oroville?
So in Oroville, we are not... actually, we have a very peculiar ecosystem because we are in a coastal area. When most of Tamil Nadu is on the hard rock. So therefore, their groundwater is very much affected, is more rapidly affected than ours. Because the thickness of alluvium that we have here in Oroville ranges up to 200, 300 meters. So as we know, I mean, we mentioned it many times, our aquifers are organized in three layers. Actually, all together, we have five layers, more or less. Three are aquifers, that means they are water-bearing, and two are aquitards, that means it's mainly clay and there is nothing in it. Enfin, there is very little water.
So there are layers of rocks and then...
They are not rocks. They are alluvium that, let's say, the erosion of the... of the plateau, the granitic plateau, whatever rock it's made of, took millions of years. And all this deposited at the bottom of the sea. And when the tip of India started lifting up out of the sea because the north part was going under the Himalayas, all these sediments that were at that time below the sea became exposed. And this is what we are sitting on, living on. So it's porous, it's aggregates, it's, but it's not a mother rock that I would say came out of fusion of the origin of Earth. This is aggregate, so it has a certain porosity. That porosity allows it to contain water. So basically, along the coast, so far, we have been sitting on a huge reservoir of fresh water. But, as we know, with all the modern developments dating back 50 years ago, when the first drilling machine started to become more and more popular, people started exploiting this groundwater reserve. And they exploited and exploited and exploited. So Oroville has been monitoring this exploitation and over-exploitation at one point. And then suddenly we realized that the water table was falling because the extraction of groundwater was in some occasions 10 times, 12 times even now more, but I don't want to tell a number because I have no real information, but definitely more than 12 times of the actual recharge. So that means if you consider our groundwater as a reserve, that means a kind of a recipient where the rainfall is harvested, and then you see that people all sitting around that recipient with a straw are sucking the water out of that recipient, but far more than what is actually going inside, then you realize that we are in a deficit. And this is what we are facing today. We had an excellent monsoon in 2015. It's not an excellent, it's an exceptional monsoon by the quantity and by the quality. The quantity was amazing. I mean, 2 meters 10 centimeters of rainfall in a year was amazing. And the quality was fantastic because the water, the rain pattern was very regular. And one of the characteristics I remember is that most of the time you would see the water falling vertically. That means there was not this type of rain that you get when you get a storm or a monsoon or a cyclone where your water is sometimes falling at 45 degrees, but mainly at 60 degrees, 70 degrees. No, the water was falling vertically.
Straight down.
Small showers, following small showers at a regular pace. Therefore, water had time to percolate in the ground before running off. At the end of the monsoon, beginning of December, when we got these two big events, one 25 centimeter in one day on the 3rd of December, and one 15 centimeter on the 4th, that means 40 centimeter of rainwater in 2 days. Of course, there we got runoff because the water, the land was already full. And then we had, so we had this exceptional thing. And then 2016 came, and what did we get? The worst extreme, but the opposite one. That means we got 680 millimeters of rain.
Which is not
against 2.10 meters in the previous year. So 2016 went through because we were capitalizing on the previous rainfall. But when 2017 comes now, we are already almost mid of the year, and from the beginning of the year we received just few centimeters of rain, not even 10 centimeters.
I think it's 8 centimeters. As far as all the tables, is about 8 centimeters.
8 centimeters. Yeah, it's something like that, yeah. And so that means 8 centimeters, it's the height of not even a glass of beer, you know. And this is what you should contemplate. So, of course, a full glass of beer gives you another impression. But when you see only 8 centimeters of water in a glass, I mean, don't be too thirsty, because this is all what we get so far as a recharge. And this is not even a recharge, because the rainfalls we got is 1 millimeter there, 2 millimeter, 3 millimeter, and this, most of the time, evaporates in a few hours. So that means we are in a complete nil recharge since so many months, and we are continuing to extract. So what does it illustrate? It illustrates one thing, is that Auroville is 100% on groundwater. And the worst of it is that our farms are, based on the data that we are collecting in these days, our farms are the most affected. Because they rely 100% on groundwater, except Annapurna, who had the wisdom to do some ponds to collect rainwater, but those ponds are anyway empty because we have no rain. And so the farming activity in Auroville is now almost at a standstill, and they will have to utilize their little water to save whatever they have. They will have to save their fruit trees. You know that these fruit trees do not die. They have to save, of course, the cattle, the chickens, the dogs, and all the animals of the farm. But they cannot start contemplating immediately to send in the soil some new cropping. They cannot because they have no water. And for example, if I take a farm like Ayar Paddy, the well is 200 meters something of, and the pump is giving only little water. We went to Roar Char, the same thing. Now the yield is almost half of what they used to get. Annapurna, the water level is at 96 meters. Yesterday I got a data from a friend of Pondicherry who told me that in Cedar Rapids, close to Annapurna, they also record 93.36 meters, something like that. So that means it's a constant. In the Vanur sandstone, the Vanur sandstone is depleted. So when I call the Vanur sandstone, I'm talking of the third aquifer, the deep one. Mm-hmm. And the deep one was very often quoted as the marvelous aquifer full of water and so on. And it's true, at the origin it was like that. But then everybody went for it. And now we have it empty, not empty, but in a total loss of pressure. That means there is no pressure anymore, and what will happen, because if I refer to the case of Annapurna, 96 meters mean that the water level, the static water level, when you are not pumping, is 70 meters below mean sea level. That means the lack of pressure is such that the seawater will intrude faster in the Vanur sandstone. So this is our situation.
It doesn't sound really rosy or nice. We are facing, and I see, Ingmar, you have already a management crisis plan, yeah?
Yeah, it's an evolving document that we're working on. Most of the energy right now, I would say, of the water group is monitoring the current situation and also preparing a crisis management plan if in case wells fail, really. That we need to, if somebody calls us and says we don't have any water in our community, you know, what? How does Oroville respond? So we're just drafting something, and we're in talks right now with the working groups around that. They're fully supportive of the plan as it also continues to evolve, and they're participating. Again, this is a plan. Hopefully we don't have to use that, you know, but we want to have it in place in case, you know, things, you know, start to happen. So,
But let's be practical, yeah? Because it's a daily situation, and in our community, no water. If I can take a shower, I'm lucky, so to speak. So what we can do, each of us, how we can address this situation, how we can act, we can maybe contribute that we at least we will have water which we could drink, because at the end, the water is life, no?
Yeah, I mean, like in our crisis management plan, we made, for example, a scale of the urgency levels. And of course, we put at the maximum urgency will be the supply of drinking water to, I would say, all forms of life. Of course, nature, vegetation and all that, at a certain point, will have to fend for itself. And actually, if you observe nature, already it is in a crisis management mood. I was looking this morning, I went walking in the garden, if I may say, and then I was looking at the thing, because somebody told me that a few days ago, that actually the trees have shrunk their canopy, and if you look at many trees, then you see they have only small leaves. When a tree would have a leaf, let us say, like 150 square centimeter, nowadays it went down to 20. Yeah. And then it's an indication that nature adapts. But we may lose many trees. We may lose many trees. That's another thing. But one thing that is important is taking stock of this challenging moment that we are going to face, to see that we are facing a new trend. New trend means there is, everybody knows, a change in the climate at the planetary level. What is one of the main effects is this extreme shift in the meteorology. And I mean, what we have now is we just experienced in 2 years the two extremes. But it shows that our water strategy is not properly oriented. Because from the beginning, Oroville developed on groundwater. And even though we have been having a spontaneous move of harvesting the rainwater through contour bending, through afforestation and all that, Now that we are growing into a neo-urban context, with more impermeabilization of the soil, change of landscape, so we realize that we have to go more into rainwater harvesting. And this should become our first source of water. But of course, it's much more challenging, because when we looked at groundwater, it looked like it was an infinite source of water. A lot of people looked at it like that. Farmers all around us considered that there is water in the ground, and then now only they start realizing that it is not infinite, and that the water level goes down, goes down, goes down, and below this is hard rock. So that means you cannot go down, go down, go down, you know. So we have to, in our urban planning, and this is the work of the water group, we are working on a water master plan, and our main efforts will be develop rainwater harvesting structures in Auroville, and that should be engineered and thought of in very efficient ways and very realistic and practical ways to make sure that people will start utilizing those sources. Because when you shift to ground to rainfall, you will face a lot of challenges in terms of storage, in terms of maintaining the quality, in terms of availability. So that means people will, I mean, all the residents, the Orovillians, whoever, they will have to become more flexible. And they will have to let themselves adapt to new situations. So this water crisis is, for us, one of our first challenges, because we may have to supply some communities where already the well seems to behave funny. Sooner or later, we will have to provide them water with tankers.
So where will we get it from?
So we are planning to get water from the rich area, but fragile area of the East Coast, because there we have a very thick layer of Cuddalore sandstone with a big capacity. But its vulnerability is, of course, the closeness to the sea. But if we realize that even if we have to supply groundwater to the central areas, we are not going to empty the Cuddalore sandstone. We are going to shift hundreds of cubic meters, definitely. We are going to shift maybe a few thousands of cubic meters. I don't know yet. But of course, this will be done in a very surgical manner, if I may say, because when we start pumping water in an area that we know is vulnerable, not in the quantity, but in the quality, so there will be a constant monitoring of the quality of that water. And if we see that the water is, for example, having the chlorides going up, or having the electroconductivity going up, meaning there is more dissolved minerals in the water or more salt in the water, then of course we will stop. And then we will have to take phase two. That means, okay, guys, we cannot have this water anymore. Then we will have to fend with whatever we have. You see, like a crisis has various levels. The same way that it already started affecting some of our wells, some of our communities and farms. But the more it will, we don't know. We just get ready with and trying to expand our minds to envisage scenarios. If this scenario comes in, okay, what should we do? I mean, it's a kind of crisis management plan. I mean, it's,
Still on Sunday, I heard that when somebody runs a hose to water the plants, 3,000 liters goes in 1 hour. And yet we are...
Yeah, most, to be verified.
Most people do water with the hose in the hand.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, what we can do? Ingmar, you have any idea what each of us could do on personal level? You know, like instead of this, the common thing is to brush your teeth with a cup, not with the open tub. That is also known in Europe and in the Western world. So what you can do here? I mean, apart from...
It's good you brought up the point of gardening. The Oroville Water Service estimates that within the residential zones, about 50% of the water used goes toward gardening. Yeah, it's high. So they don't have exact figures, but that's what their estimate is. So gardening is a key element. Right now we're really saying keep your plants in survival mode. But not in thriving mode. Certainly don't plant anything now. We've heard reports of people planting things. It's just not the time, clearly. And it involves a lot of things, right? We have a bunch of water-saving tips on our website that you can visit. And there's a section around gardens. It's about mulching to retain the moisture on the plant. It's about watering at appropriate times of day, early in the morning, in the afternoon. It's also really about training. If you're not the one directly doing the watering, training the people who are doing the watering, installing drip irrigation. There are numerous measures you can take in terms of gardening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at least in my community, it's getting to that point where we're really questioning, are we, you know, watering with this huge hose pipe, these ornamentals? Maybe we just stick to our fruit trees right now. We just go into kind of a survival mode. Mm-hmm. Also, because we're not on wastewater recycling, we're pumping fresh water to water our gardens. These are questions that it involves a social element too. Communities need to come together and prioritize and figure out, you know, what's...
Are we going to survive our precious flowers, no?
Yeah, and put the water in some context, right? What's the most important thing? Domestic use, drinking water, domestic use, and then moving out from there.
And I recently heard that we spend, instead of, which is kind of normal use, 150 liters per person, we use in some cases even 800 liters per person per day, no?
Yeah, it happens. It happens, and really we should true. Not hide ourselves from that, because this is our starting point. And what we have to do is realize, why do I use 800 liters of water per person per day? Do I really need it? Do I really need to have this exotic kind of landscape around my house? I'm not in Bali, I'm not in Thailand, I'm not in... yesterday I met some people from Reunion Island, no? In the Indian Ocean, where they get more than 3 meters of rainfall in a year. Of course, we dream of that. Why? Because we want water around us. But if you look at the people living in the desert, I went across Sahara, and there you experience water in a totally different fashion, and you start enjoying dust, sand, dryness, all these other aspects, this other extreme of water. So I don't say we have to transform Oroville into a plateau desertic. We had it when we came, but we choose to transform it into something like a forest, like a green, because we know that it will attract water, that rainwater that we need so badly. But to maintain that microclimate, already we have so many people working on it, all the foresters, green belters, whoever, so many people are already working on it. So I just call on these people, please wake up. It's time to join the troops, you know. We need people, and we need the general population awareness that what we are calling for the time being, is just be aware that our situation may become dramatic. For the time being, it is critical, let's say. And the less we pump in the center of Oroville, the longer period we may have in front of us to survive here. I put it in those terms. But this is very important, because very often we are faced with this argument: why should I save water when actually all the villagers around are pumping like crazy? This is a false argument. It can be true in a certain mindset, but if you look at it from the hydrogeological point of view, it does not make sense, because water takes a lot of time to travel in the ground, because it has to go through sand, it has to flow like this. So we have to play with this time factor, and therefore, if you want to have this time factor available, don't continue to overdraft on the groundwater that we have here. Mm-hmm. Keep it as much as you can. That's why, for example, when we say we will import water, we prefer to import water from outside of Auroville, from the southeast side of Auroville, because we know that this area, when it rains, will recharge very fast. Mm-hmm. So you see, there is a strategy, there is a thinking behind it, and we are ready to share it. I mean, we are trying, for example, maybe you want to speak of the bulletin?
Yeah, right now we've just started a Monday morning bulletin every week to keep the going out to the working groups to keep them informed of the situation.
So just to the working group, not as a mass mail.
Right now, that's the situation. Yeah, we're kind of looking at how we want to proceed with communication. Mm-hmm. But right now, it's really just to keep the working groups informed. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see in future.
Mm-hmm. You see, because we inform, we are trying to work with working groups because we consider ourselves responsible, let us say, of a certain vision of the thing. Mm. We are kind of trying to build awareness. But it's important for, we do not have the social responsibility over the residents of Auroville. So therefore, those groups have economical power, social responsibility, and communication means eventually with government agencies, with, and it's important that the leading groups, I call them like that, they are a form of leadership for Auroville, are aware of a situation, because we may have to go in a kind of a warlike organization mood here. It's not an enemy that we are facing, it's a situation with nature. And therefore, we have to organize ourselves. This is what we are trying to do. Mm-hmm. In order to know what is at stake, what is the threat that we have in front of us, and how best can we mitigate with that difficulty.
Thank you for today, and we can still pray for the rain, right?
Yes. No, we will keep you posted about the progress of that, how it will evolve.
Yeah.
We are anyway in a transition. And for us, the main transition is shifting from groundwater. Groundwater should rest. We have to organize ourselves.
To the lower rest, yeah?
It has to rest. And particularly that bottom aquifer, we have to let it in peace. So we are working on different strategies how to get that done. It will take time. When it's more ready, then we will communicate.
You got a straight vision, no?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for today.
Thank you.
See you soon. I think so.
Yeah.
We are still here.